You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, I'm sure you know it already, but the election was on Saturday. The result was a landslide victory for the Labour Party, who have gained 49% of the vote, putting them on track to win 64 seats in Parliament. Jacinda Ardern has said that it will take 2 to 3 weeks to form the government as they make the decision whether to go as a majority in Parliament or whether they make some agreement with either what is likely to be the Green Party or the Māori Party. I spoke to political scientist from the University of Canterbury, Bronwyn Hayward, about the election results. We talked a little bit about the options that the Labour Party has, and we also spoke about the impact of voter turnout this year, with a high number of people advanced voting and also enrolling on the day. Here is Bronwyn.
Well, I think we've just about used up all our adjectives for things like historic and unprecedented, but it is quite tricky for Labour because nobody since 1996 has won a clean sweep like this. And with winning like all the party vote in the South Island, it's an enormous majority, and that's actually quite difficult to manage. My feeling is that they probably will seek to have some kind of relatively limited agreement with the Greens at least, if not the Māori Party, because they want to look like they are building a consensus and it is not just one massive Labour Party. Because New Zealanders generally like coalition governments, I mean, and the whole idea of MMP was to give us a consensus majority government built up of lots of parties. We just weren't expecting one party to sort of take everything in this way.
Obviously, as you just said, there has been commentary that the Labour majority government isn't the result an MMP system is supposed to give. Like, what are your thoughts about that? I have seen also commentary saying, you know, this is actually sort of a result that MMP could give and that there are options for the Labour Party under an MMP system. So what are those sort of agreements going to look like? If it's not a coalition agreement, what else might happen with the Green Party or Māori?
Well, we've got really flexible governance arrangements in New Zealand. One of the things about our way we govern is it's pretty pragmatic. So MMP itself was a German system that was designed after the war, and it was designed to try and build consensus, proportional representation, so that they wouldn't see, again, the rise of like a fascist power. So actually, in many ways, what Labour's delivered is a broadly consensual large party, and it just happened to win. But in the spirit of kind of building consensus, they might do a number of things. They could have some kind of ministerial role inside or outside of cabinet. They could, for instance, offer the climate role back to James Shaw. They could offer something to Eugenie Sage. We've had deputy undersecretaries. They could have a confidence and supply agreement, which is where the small parties agree to support the government on its key issues, like getting its budget through, which is the supply of funding, which is its main issue. They don't need it in this case because they've got a majority of a parliament as a Labour Party, but it is just nice to have. Probably Labour will want to be a bit cautious in how it signals that it is still leading. But at the same time, the Greens want to be cautious because they won't want to give up their independent voice and brand. That is a really important thing for small parties, and it worked quite well for the Greens this time, that in the election period we've just been through, that they weren't actually quite as bonded as closely to government as New Zealand First, that they were sort of inside but slightly outside the tent and could still criticise some key things. So they are probably also wanting to keep some independence. So there could be all sorts of kind of arrangements where they're given some symbolic roles and maybe some leadership roles, but not actually really a central part of government.
That is actually an interesting point about the Green Party, because I know that a lot of people are obviously wanting a coalition government, but also people have been quite negative about the Greens and them sort of not standing for exactly what they're meant to stand for in sort of the public's or their voters' eyes. So I can imagine that will definitely be a consideration for the Greens going forward. I hadn't thought about that actually, about them actually themselves wanting to stay a little bit further away from being right in the middle of it all.
Yeah, well, we heard Marama Davidson signal that yesterday when she was talking on Nine to Noon. She said, you know, that they've also got to have the consideration about how do they maintain their independent voice. So there are really great benefits being in government, but there are also really great benefits of being able to speak your mind on issues that matter to you. And so for Labor, they won't want a party on their left able to criticise them like mad. And also for the Greens, it'll be a trade-off between being able to get some big stuff done that really matters. Like for the Greens, it was important to have a government relationship to get that carbon zero bill through. But they've got to pick what are the big issues that they will want to get through where having some kind of relationship with the government would make it worth it for them perhaps giving up some of their independence to really criticise the government when they want to.
Now, in the off chance that the Labor Party does go just to be a majority party, they don't have any relationship with any of the other parties in Parliament, what do you think the reaction will be from the public if, as you said, that New Zealanders like coalition governments?
Yeah, I mean, the polling is pretty split. They like, about half of people really passionately like or strongly or like coalition governments. The other half prefer a stable government. But New Zealanders like backing the underdog, and so they don't like great big political parties. We just never have been great about that. Maybe in the 50s and 40s we were really we were great joiners of big political parties, but increasingly people like to have politics that reflects their identity. They like to have the opportunity to chop around, to choose which party they want to support on which key issues. So the real risk for Labor is that they come in as this huge red power block, and that can be its own bring its own set of problems and frustrations. We saw that down here in Canterbury after quite a few years of a very strong, dominant national government. That wave of blue, it was powerful, it lasted for a significant period, but it was really turfed out. And I think Labor will want to avoid that kind of, they will want to be building up support. So they probably will go a bit more gently, I'd say. I'd be very surprised if they don't have some kind of relationship with the Greens. I think it's just too big a risk for them.
Just briefly about, I'm also from Christchurch, and I know that down south and throughout the South Island it was a very blue area, and now it's been flipped quite considerably over to red. Why do you think that has changed so significantly this time around?
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? I never expected electorates like my mother's, which is Ireland, which is, I was looking up the records, I think it's been in a Conservative government since the 1880s, you know, as an area. It's been different names as an electorate, but it's had Conservative leadership since then. So it is incredible that it has shifted. I think everyone is surprised by that. Everyone's surprised by Rangitata as well. However, it does, when that happens, it's not, there are several things, I think. Yes, of course, COVID and the really strong leadership that the Prime Minister showed through that is a really significant factor. But it's not just that. If National only thinks it was a COVID election, they won't be learning from the way in which it appears, and I think that they've become disconnected from voters. I mean, that is quite a significant challenge for them, is to go back and actually listen to what the community is concerned about. And when you hear interviews at the moment in this local area where I live in, which is always traditionally very conservative, just talking to people, there's a sense of, I didn't know that all my neighbours felt like I did. So, I mean, I think even people surprised themselves that they just felt that they weren't being effectively heard. Now, that's a really big challenge for the opposition, to just be a bit humbled, go back to listen, to decide what kind of party it's going to be. Because I think politics is changing. It is a sort of people deride Ardern for her kind politics, but it has changed the language and the way in which people are talking. People are looking for a state-led government that is positive and supportive. It's okay to talk about a role of government now. And all of these things caught National a bit by surprise, and they really have to think, well, in this new environment, what does conservatism look like? It can't just be critical and reactive and market-led all the time. What is the new conservatism looking like? So that will be quite a challenge for them.
Do you think perhaps that nervousness perhaps around conservatism for voters also comes from what we're seeing overseas with the states and sort of a swing to the right over there?
It's hard to generalise, but a lot of psychology studies show that New Zealanders, we don't really like conflict. And we're a small country, and small countries often don't like that kind of intense conflict because we've all got to live together. So one of the nice things about New Zealand politics is that we are all connected, which is something that doesn't often happen increasingly in big places like the US or the UK, where increasingly people know fewer and fewer friends who have very different political views from them. So that's a very precious thing to hang on to in New Zealand. And I think COVID also showed that people are really interested in politics when it actually affects their everyday lives and their future. And we saw that in the really big turnout. The 81.5% turnout is really high, 82 actually. And I think when we look at that, it isn't just COVID. I think it's a series of things. It's people are interested about and anxious about the future, but we've seen the school strikes. We've seen changes to the rules in the election so that it's possible to just enrol on the day, which was a big vote suppression effect that was just removed and has made a transformational difference, I think. And things like the Make It 16 legal challenge, you know, just actually why can't kids vote, is starting to resurrect this idea that votes matter. And then movements like Ihu Mātou, they remind people that politics is a collective action. And all of that is good for the vote.
That's a whole number of factors that have come together at this particular time. Do you think that sort of voter turnout will continue into the future, or do you think it is very much related to the times we're in?
They wax and wane, but actually it is a good sign that people are starting to talk about politics differently, because one of the things, this is part of the opposition's challenge, one of the problems that we've had for the last 30 years is that politics is something that's done by elites, and it's talked about by people like me, you know, commentators, and it's increasingly seemed distant from people's lives. And when it's part of their lives, it's quite nasty. You can get quite attacked and trolled, and, you know, it's a horrible experience. So, but what has changed about the way Ardern is talking about politics, and having a large number of women coming into power at the moment as politicians, is that we know that shifts the language and the way in which politics is talked about. It becomes more inclusive. It becomes something that more people can aim for. People may be frustrated with what Ardern's doing, but they feel like they could have a say and do something as well. So if that trend continues, then we can expect relatively higher levels of community participation in politics again, and I think that's a great thing for our democracy.
The Electoral Commission made some quite serious changes to the way we voted this year because of the impact that rule change had on the number of voters. Do you think that's something that the Electoral Commission will think about doing in the future, allowing people to advance vote for, you know, a couple of weeks and then also being able to enrol on the day?
Yes, I think enrolling on the day is here to stay. That's been a rule change, and I think that's a great one. It's a small shift that actually fixes lots of things. It enables people who are starting to get really interested in politics as the campaign picks up. Suddenly they do want to have a say, now they can. So that's a big one. And yes, I think having nearly 70% of the community turn out in advance vote or special vote is incredible. And I think that suggests that people like the fact that there are maybe three weekends at which they can have a go at voting. And that's actually probably going to stay, I would say, and that will change the way we campaign. But it's a good compromise, because prior to that there was a lot of discussion about whether we do digital voting, and it's so unsafe and so difficult to operate in the kind of digital security era that we're in, that this is a much more effective, I think, strategy, is to just allow people to vote for longer.
but next time it might have an impact on how we campaign, as you said, because I do know that a lot of people voted and then parties were still releasing policies and there were still things going on before Election Day.
Yeah, and I think it's quite a marathon for everybody that was involved. Yeah. It's probably the fact that lots of people just went out and voted. They don't want to have it spent months or weeks in a campaign. But it isn't a bad thing if the parties have to get their points out early. And it gives a little bit more space. I mean, this was a strange campaign. There was so much focus on just the two leaders, Judith Collins and Jacinda Ardern, in the media debates. It was very hard for the small parties in mainstream media to get a look in. So the longer campaign actually, I think, helped them a bit. It helped them build up their ground force. It helped them get their vote out. So it has advantages for small parties as well.
That was political scientist Bronwyn Hayward, speaking about how the Labor Party may choose to form their government, the impact of voting rules changing due to COVID-19 on voter turnout, and also whether the Electoral Commission may consider implementing these changes long term.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.